like a regular spatula, but you can do like other things easier than if you'd use a regular spatula because it's offset. I mean, think of the possibilities. It leaves so much room for activities.
Available now for $9.99. Batteries not included.
You don't even need batteries, and they are available for $9.99. I looked.
No.
If you're trying to sell me this thing, I still have no idea what it actually does, but I think
Okay, so imagine like a butter knife, you know, like a round butter knife. But it's kind of like, it comes out the handle, then it goes along a little bit, and then it goes down.
Yeah, no, but why, then, Jeff? Why?
Like, all right, so
is this for like applying fondant or something?
You could use it for that. You could use it for so many things. It's really good for flipping stuff and getting like right underneath things as they're frying without having to get the whole spatula out. Oh, because it's a more precise and delicate tool for a more civilized age.
Brits talking baking. I feel like we're edging into a different.
Which one of the gremlins are we dealing with now?
The Great British Bake Off.
it's the Jeff is Hungry Gremlin.
Anyway, hi. Welcome to Indulgently Minimal. I'm Boggy, and I am joined today by Jeff.
Hey up, guys.
And Murdoch.
Hello, everyone.
And this week we will be continuing our conversation about the dreaded Diderot effect, this idea that when you buy one object, you can't stop there, you must keep going until you've completed the set and your life will be complete and you shall finally gain true happiness.
Because you can get the offset spatulas in like different sizes as a set.
This is a case in point.
See, this is the crazy thing. We've been talking for over 2 minutes now and I still don't understand why. And that's really the question. Why do you want the object in the first place? What promise is this object making to you? In order to part you from your hard-earned cash.
Okay, so, like I say, this is not using the offset spatula, although it's really good for using that, but, you know, say you've just baked a cake or something and you need to poke it to make sure it's cooked all the way through. Are you going to use a very small... you could use a toothpick. This is the offset spatula. It's small, it's delicate, it's perfect for use. Or you could use a fork and just really, you know, get in there and ruin it. This is the largest spatula of it. The offset spatula allows you to do things with a more delicate hand and easier care. It's a more subtle instrument of food stuff.
If you can't pronounce the word gastronomical, you're not allowed to buy the spatula. I'm sorry. That's just the rules. I don't make
gastronomical.
Them.
Gastronomical.
Just...
It's the gastronomical thing. I said it.
I could almost swear this sounds like a paid sponsor spot.
The funny thing is this is actually the thin end of the wedge, although it's the thin end of the spatula, but still.
You could use the offset spatula as a wedge. That's the great
Jeff,
thing.
Jeff, down.
Down, Jeff.
The Diderot effect is the... In the original, it's the dressing gown. He bought this beautiful, elegant, silken dressing gown because he loved it so much, then realized none of the other things in his life matched. And this is such a well-known thing that many companies actually use their so-called flagship products to sort of get their foot in the door, the so-called thin end of the wedge. And then they start, well, you have the iPhone, but do you have the headphones that go with it? Do you have the MacBook that seamlessly communicates? Well, suddenly you've spent thousands of dollars on this thing and you're still an unproductive person, but
guilty as charged, sir.
the way these things are sold and advertised to us, there's a promise, or there is an implicit promise of what this object will bring and what the interconnectivity and family of objects will bring. And I think that's really, I mean, that's part of the Diderot effect. I think we're talking a lot about that today. It's the promise of these things that may or may not, in fact, be true.
There are two aspects to this. One of them is like the quality of life improvements in a promise, and the second one is also this sort of, it is trying to sell you the image idea of like living lavishly, opulent.
So conspicuous consumption. Like it's not just that I have bought a product that fulfills a need. I have bought a product that says something about me as a person, as a personality. Mm-hmm. Look at my Apple Watch. I am a person who can afford an Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
I have the expensive product. I am like the models on TV. I am beautiful. I am young. I am wonderful. I have all these things and all for only 3 billion
monies.
Monies.
Well, it's not just this, though. there are many promises that are made to different people because it's not everybody that's looking for the Instagram life with the glamour and the glitz. Sometimes it's more about the productivity. You get your MacBook because it's just, it's simple, it's elegant, it gets out of the way and lets you get on with your work. This is how it was sold to me. I still find that. That's why I like using it. But it's not going to fundamentally make you able to write that novel that you've been trying to write for who knows how long. But it kind of promises that it will.
It promises, now I finally have a device that I like using, that I want to be interacting with. Now I will finally not be fighting against my tool and the genius can flow from my fingertips to the eyes of the readers. It's not going to happen. It's never going to happen like that.
A small confession.
Oh.
Small confession. Three MacBooks later, I have yet to actually create an iPhone app. Now that the app market is dying.
Now's the perfect time, you know, ride that tailwind right into the cauldron.
Well, this is the thing, though. They actually, in many cases, are counting on this because that's how they sell you the ecosystem. That's how they sell you the set. No. It's not your fault that you haven't built your iPhone app yet. It's not your fault. Maybe you just needed the watch and the headphones and the charging kit and the...
You need all the devices to understand the ecosystem in its fullest sense, to understand how to truly create the app that everybody will love. How can we create a modern Flappy Bird? Of the,
once you've assembled them all, finally you have the power to be productive. There's this awkward question of when you're finally left cold and realizing the problem may not be. It's a picnic problem, as I've heard it. It's a problem not in computer, it's in chair.
It really is like the ultimate problem, and it's kind of a mean thing to say, but ultimately the ultimate problem with all this stuff is it's you, it's us. Like you can have all these things.
Not you, it's us.
It's us. It's when you have all these things without you sat there doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing, they're just inanimate objects. Mm-hmm. They have no soul, they have no music. They are just tools to be used. So without you, it doesn't matter how great they are.
And some of these tools do actually remove the friction when, you know, selected carefully and used correctly.
Well, we're going to pick up on this point a little later. There is the reason that the promise works is it's not always a lie. There are many products that work the way they want to, and there are some products that are just purely an upgrade. We will pick up on that a little later, so keep listening, huh? I think when it comes to the problem is us, this is also where sometimes either spending money isn't the solution or the way we're spending money isn't the solution, where if you're having trouble being productive, if you're having focus issues, then maybe a better writing app isn't the solution. Perhaps you need a writing coach or take a writing class or something like that, rather than just forever accumulating objects into the dragon's hoard that we've described many, many times. Perhaps look inwards and see how you can improve yourself. People wrote novels before they were even typewriters. If that's, you could just sit down with a pen and paper.
Yeah, I mean, for the love of God, I mean, Tolstoy must have written those things by hand, the poor guy.
Well, who was it that, it wasn't Tolstoy, it was the Dostoevsky had hypographia, like he just wrote compulsively, I think.
He also had Dostoevsky syndrome. I think it was Dostoevsky. for him, like, the reason his books are so incredibly, we're going up, this is Dostoevsky cast now. The reason his books and characters are so incredibly lifelike and real is because I think it was something to do with, like, he had this, like, neurological condition where these were genuinely real, or he saw these things as almost real things. Like, not in like a Fantasyland thing, but he was able to visualize these things so clearly. I mean, also, they're all just Dostoevsky. Every character is just Dostoevsky.
You and I are just Dostoevsky.
Yeah. Like every character in a Dostoevsky book is just another part of Dostoevsky's personality. I love Dostoevsky.
Anyway, I think the other point that needs to be made, and it's an uncomfortable one, we have touched upon these topics quite a few times, but ultimately, these things are sold to you by a company, and the only thing the company wants is your money. and they're always going to want more of your money. It's never enough.
It's not just your money that they want. They also want your data.
Well, because that data could be turned into money.
Money can be used for goods and services.
Yes.
Ah.
And the company itself should be viewed in many cases as this insatiable demon that will just continue to suck up your money and resources as long as you let it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can never be satisfied. In many ways, there's a bit of a parallel to, I know in my own life, the desire to accrue objects. It's to fulfill something inside, and you're never going to be satisfied. That hole will never be filled, no matter how many iPhones you buy.
Hmm. And these things are very often designed in a way where they will leave out just enough for you to desire the next thing.
There's a little bit of a bait and switch that goes on here, especially with the yearly update cycles that so many tech companies have adopted. But you go back and watch movies like Fight Club, and you know IKEA gets called out for the same thing. They're always introducing new product lines. They're always introducing the next thing.
It's not a new phenomena. However, the way that we talked about it in the advertising as violence related episode,
but a favorite of mine.
Whilst the concept is not new, the barrage of it in modern day life is quite new. I don't think we've ever been as battered by these things as we are now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was it? They said Roku have just, I don't think it's a pattern. I think they've developed an actual way that their TVs now deliver ads over HDMI. So even if you've plugged like a PlayStation or a Fire Stick or whatever, I think you could literally have like a Nintendo 64 over a HDMI adapter. It'll put ads over the stream. Yeah.
I wasn't planning on buying a TV anytime soon, but it's when companies do stuff like this, it's really, really nice. You think, great, I can write off that entire company now. I don't need to even need to think about Roku TVs because that is just evil.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting very, very close to the Futurama ads inserted into your dreams.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Oh, God.
And it's difficult with, like, this. I think this is the main issue with advertising. The bait and switch is real. What will be advertised as the final complete solution until you actually make the purchase and start using the product, then once you have a foot in through the door, you realize there are missing things.
Mm-hmm. Or it doesn't quite do everything you needed, and I think this is the other thing, it's not always even a bait and switch. They just know that you as a human being will never be satisfied. So they can always just give it a little bit of a polish, add a couple extra features, and boom, you're going to want the next one, whether you need it or not.
Well, like I said, it taps into that part of the brain where we've all done it, where if you get the thing as it's advertised, you think, finally, now I will have the drive to do what I wanted to do. Now I can be that novelist. Now I can write that app. Now I can do something. My brain's gone to cheese. Mm-hmm. I should probably eat lunch. But there's that part of our brain, that there's that broken psychology that companies know it's there. And it's like, if I finally get all the accoutrement, I can really be good at this hobby. As if the object will give you the desire and the drive to do it rather than the other way around.
We have discussed this on an episode, I think, what was it, The Fallacy of the Pro?
Yeah, as Jeff quite astutely brought up, that what companies are doing is they're trying to tap into some rather well-understood human psychology where we always want more. Mm. We always think that, as we said, the tool will solve the problem, because that's how human beings are minded, is that we have a problem, we need a tool, we can now do the problem. But when the problem is intrinsic rather than extrinsic, it's never quite, the object isn't going to solve that. And they know this, but they create their product lines in such a way to work on this. So if you're the type of person who wishes they were more professional, perhaps, like they wish they were more able to be like, you know, their own person, their own boss. I would love to be the photographer. I'd love to be the, oh, there's a word I'm trying to find here where you're like a consultant or a contractor, something like that, you know, work your own boss.
You're professional and organized and...
They sell these products as pro or extra or somehow like if you get the pro line of this, then you're finally going to have the tools that a pro needs. And they know that the problem isn't going to be solved just by that.
Headache with pictures. What's being sold is it's a bypass to the effort required. It's weight loss pills.
It circumnavigates the what you actually need. And this is why it always works when it's being sold to you, because it will never fix it, because it's circumnavigating the fact that you need to actually put in the work and the effort.
Yes.
As we've said, you know, like maybe actually the device you've got right now, just using what you've got to try and pursue what you're trying to do to the end of the usage of that device, that is the minimalist approach. And once you've got the habit, once you've got the ability, once you've got the rudimentary knowledge of what you actually want and finally understand the limitations of the tools you're working with, then you should go and get the new thing, because then you understand how to actually use it and why you need that pro. Because you understand what it's like. You understand more. And I think that, yeah, as you say, Murdoch, they sell a way of circumnavigating that, which is contradictory to the whole process, but that's why they do it, because it will just be a repetitive cycle.
We covered this quite extensively in our Fallacy of the Pro episode.
And another side thought is that maybe it's important to actually see the real value in certain things. For a gym membership, what they're selling you is get into shape. You have access to all of these facilities. Look at these other people doing exercise things to get into shape. The value of the membership to a gym might actually just be access to qualified, certified trainers who will hold you accountable to the effort that you need to put in.
Well, yeah, it's people that understand, one, understand how to hold you accountable, but two, understand how to get the best out of you as an individual. Because you can go and use a machine and that's fine, but there may be a more effective way of using it that a professional will be able to spot and teach and tell you about.
Or they can spot when you're putting in as much effort as you can, or maybe, you know, you've gone one or two weights lower than you should because you don't want to work out too hard. A trainer will push you. They'll find your limits and they'll help you get as close to them as possible so that you can push those limits out further. And it's a good example to contrast against what I find is the negative side of this is... exercise tracking and sleep tracking are an excellent example of devices that promise a lot and don't actually deliver much.
Well, I mean, there's this, the new Apple Watch advert, or at least I think the one we get here, it's probably the same everywhere. And as you know, it's the usual Apple, you know, hoo-ha-ery. But then this, you know, a woman wakes up and the Apple Watch says, "You got 8 hours of sleep." And she pumps her fist in the air and it's like, "Yeah," because that's what she needed to give her 8 hours of sleep. It was a bloody watch, not all the other things that cause sleep issues. And it just, it's a very, I can't think of the word, but it's, I hate that advert. I hate the way it's doing it. It's malicious in a way.
Well, there's a deep, deep irony as well here, which is that the way sleep tracking, exercise tracking, all of this data collection that these devices do for you, and depending on the company and their terms and conditions, do to you, the data itself doesn't really help a lot. You have to be tracking your whole life in order to make any sense of it. Like, okay, so you slept for 8 hours, but only 4 hours was quote-unquote quality sleep, and that's why you're waking up tired. Well, why? You have to be tracking your diet. You have to be tracking your mood. You have to be tracking all of the things and then be willing to put in all this work of like, okay, I'm going to remove dairy this week. Okay, that didn't affect my sleep. I'm going to remove alcohol. Oh, I've slept a lot better. So obviously this is affecting my sleep. And the thing is, you can do all of this without any devices. You know how you feel when you wake up.
there's a very old classic thing of just, if you can do it with a pen and a paper and you just track what you eat in a month, how much you sleep and how you felt, and then also track your mood. And that is, yes, you're not getting all the metadata, you're not getting your heartbeat rate, you're not getting your blood levels, you're not getting your Zogon,
you know, forces.
But you will see, oh, okay, I felt awful this day. I also slept terribly. And the day before I ate 4 kebabs. That might have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I find these devices in particular are very emblematic of the problem we're talking today, where I think smartwatches make a lot of promises. They promise that through this data collection and through the gamification of exercise and all the other hoo-ha-ery, as you call it.
It's in the dictionary. Look it up.
It's in the Jeffionary.
In
the Bectionary.
Wait, no, it's in the Jeff Bectionary.
Yeah. They promise that they will help you improve all these things, but what they don't tell you is that the amount of work and effort you have to put in to make the improvements is roughly the same. They're not going to do the effort for you. They're just going to help automate the data collection and then share that data with everybody and their mum.
They're not going to share it, Moggy. They're going to sell it.
Oh, sorry. There's an obscure reference in my brain going on right now. It's like, hear my garage.
Oh, knowledge. My God. God, that guy's still around, you know. He's still hustling. Like, they just
such an you know what I'm talking about.
I think something Lopez. I can't remember his full name. He's a con man. He's an absolute con man, and I'm not. That's fine. I can go out into the world and say that. But he's still around, Matt. Surprisingly,
which is funny because you know this is partially what we're discussing.
Yeah,
what all this, you know, sleep tracking or fitness tracking stuff should give you, the user, the individual who's buying into this idea, is visibility on like where to improve. And it sadly very rarely delivers on that promise. Yes, I can see an improvement in my, you know, blood oxygen level. Like I am at a rested, you know, a better rested heart rate kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's not as valuable to you if you're not actually looking at the data, and it's still a lot more valuable to the companies collecting all of this?
Pretty much. But here's the thing that complicates everything even further. Not every product that makes these promises is a con. And an excellent example of this would be an electric toothbrush. If you don't have one, you should probably get one.
You don't need to get one with Wi-Fi connectivity and one that's like, but just an electric toothbrush that pulses every whatever quadrant time you need to brush the entirety of your mouth. And it will make a massive difference if you don't already have one, because oral mouth health is incredibly important and it has so many interconnected benefits for the rest of your health. It really does. It is a life-changing tiny piece of technology because... Mm-hmm. A healthy mouth, obviously you've got all the cavities and good teeth. That's great. It makes your teeth look great, which is also really good. But also bad mouth health is also associated with things like heart disease because something to do with the plaque. It's like it's all interconnected. And this little tiny thing that will cost you insert amount of money in your region here will make your life better. It does not need to be connected to the internet. No, that was a whole thing. Don't buy smart toothbrushes.
Connect it to the internet. See how many times you've brushed your teeth and get a friendly reminder when you have met your quota of brushing teeth.
God, could you imagine the Duolingo owl, but for teeth?
Oh, no. But no, I think, this is Jeff's very important public service announcement.
Also, floss, people. For the love of God, please floss.
I don't wanna.
It only hurts for like the first 3 or 4 times you do it. Then it's fine, I swear. Trust me.
It's the doing that's important, not the thing you do it with.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with flossing, it really is important to use like actual floss. Don't use a fork or something, please.
Well, where it gets complicated is that you can put devices and products on two ends of a spectrum, but it is unfortunately a spectrum. And most things fit somewhere in the middle, which makes it really difficult to decide, you know, so a good example again would be running shoes. You want to be a fit and healthy person, as I do. So the first thing you think is I should go running. I should probably get some running shoes. Why are running shoes so expensive? What does gate mean? What does pronation mean? Like, why are all these things happening? They're very expensive, and some person will happily walk you through a very long process to spend a lot of money. And you've got to wonder, like, do I need these? Am I going to hurt myself if I don't have good running shoes? Didn't we used to run barefoot? I can't do that. I live in a city.
It's also like it is a slippery slope. Just back to the top of the episode, it's a slippery slope into now that I have the fancy running shoes. Do I need the moisture wicking, you know, sweatshirt and pants?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You do need the moisture wicking. You do need them. For the love of God, don't go running in a cotton t-shirt. But you don't need to get the super expensive pro athlete wicking stuff. You can buy a cheap polyester moisture wicking thing and it will be fine.
Yeah.
Depending on your you know, individual situations and skin type and all that sort of stuff. But
yeah, because ultimately the promise of the shoe is that once you have the right shoe, you will want to go running. You will be able to do the exercise that when you normally go, I don't wanna, and then sit on the couch and eat more kebabs. They don't.
No. I mean, like, I have bought numerous expensive running shoes in my history, and I have mild pronation. I can't remember what it's called, but ultimately the best running shoes I have and the ones I still have are a pair of cheap Pumas I bought like 15 years ago.
I was there.
You were there. We bought shoes together. It was very cute, and they're fine. My expensive running shoes have long since died. They have fallen apart, and they were fine. And do you need to fix pronation issues?
Maybe.
No, maybe you do. It depends on how bad it is for you as an individual and how much it is affecting your running. You know, if you've got bad if you've got bad pronation, it can affect your knees.
From what I understand, if you have pronation bad enough to actually need it, you probably already know.
Yes, and you get prescription shoes, which is not the sexiest word I've ever said, but
The difficulty is learning to differentiate.
It's key. It's absolutely key, is differentiating between what is necessary and what is fanciful and desire.
And I think what's even worse is that what we want is a guarantee, right? You want to go, if I buy this product, my problem will be solved and my life will be measurably better after the fact. And there's this tiny little element of, I don't know, the word is like chance, gambling, where periodically you hit the big one. You get this product and yes, it's like the electric toothbrush. I feel better. My mouth is cleaner than it's ever been before. And then you spend the rest of your life chasing that high. The next product that will immeasurably improve my life.
The unicorn. I have won. I did it.
Yeah. You're never going to get that guarantee. You're going to swing wildly from, I bought an expensive camera because I want to get into photography and I never used it, to, I got an expensive chair to fix my posture and now my back doesn't hurt anymore. You know.
How does that feel, Murdoch?
That is actually a very funny one. That was an expensive gamble?
Mm-hmm.
That was a really expensive gamble. And it did pay off in the sense that my back doesn't hurt and I don't think about it anymore.
Yeah. It's just your chair now.
It has moved into that wonderful spot of just doing its job. It has gone out of the way, and you, when everything's running great, nobody thinks about it. It's like that role in every company everybody has. Nobody knows that person exists until it goes wrong.
Yeah.
And it's the chair is the perfect example of that.
And it's also a really good example of sometimes you do need a tool to do something, because like with chairs, there is like a very simple solution. It's like, stop slouching. Please sit up straight. Moggy, sit up. Like I have adult voices in my brain telling me to stop slouching. Yeah, pretty much.
All the ergonomic chairs focus on you fixing your posture, which is something you can technically do on your own.
Yes, but it's very nice when a chair does it for you. That's the thing. Like, it's, okay, you know you could do this on your own. We know you can do this on your own. But we all, us together, know you're not going to. So here's a chair that's not going to let you sit wrong. It's kind of that situation. I guess that's one of the, because ultimately, what we're trying to work towards is working with the Diderot effect, understanding the behavior, understanding how it can trigger certain unwanted behaviors in ourselves. We have to, as we say so many times, be mindful, watch your own behavior and learn what is going to trigger you to spend money you don't want to, and how to spend money in a way that is going to improve your life. So it's the chair, not the expensive camera.
It's very cliched. I think, like, you know, there's a very underlying current of, like, know thyself. Figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. That is also work to be done.
Well, that's why I use the word trigger. Like, it's when you go through the shop and you see the illuminated cat lamp and you go, ooh, and you will buy it. You have to learn, like, why do I do that?
I have no regrets.
It's from Flying Tiger. It's not that expensive.
Hmm.
But understanding those triggers can then, you know, I mean, I don't know if there's a set of illuminated lamps that could be assembled.
There is a duck that lies on its side that looks like it's going through a crisis, and there's also a broccoli that does the same thing. And they're awesome. Yeah. You could also use the duck feet as a phone stand.
Well, there you go.
I don't know why I'm always reminded of, like, you know, there's a certain breed of penguin that will, like, collect pebbles, all the shiny pebbles to make a nest.
Oh, yeah, and then they steal each other's rocks and pebbles, don't they?
Gentoo penguins, maybe.
And otters have favourite rocks, I know that.
Yeah, they do. You ever seen them sit on the land their back and they're playing with them, knocking them back and forth?
I love otters. That's where we want to be. We want to be the otter with his single rock and just floating gently down the river, happy with his rock.
They do not use those rocks to, like, smash open clams and stuff. I mean,
well, an otter's got to eat, you know. It's,
you know. I mean, have you ever seen an otter's teeth? I mean, those things will nip you.
They'll give you a nasty nip like a badger will. But that's kind of where we want to be, rather than the penguin hoarding rocks, the dragon hoard of objects being hoarded for the sake of it because you bought one thing on a whim and suddenly you're now, you know, collecting Magic the Gathering cards and you're hundreds, thousands in debt just trying to complete this set and finally have that hand that will beat that one person who beats you every week because they're spending more money than you.
The pile of broken promises.
You know what will trigger you in this way. And sometimes it's the idea we said before, you have to be your own parent. Sometimes you have to go, you know what, maybe this hobby isn't right for me. Maybe an MMO isn't for Moggy, who has a slightly addictive personality and would lose himself into this digital world forever. Sometimes you have to be your own parent.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay, so I hope you've enjoyed that one. We will be finishing up this sort of small trilogy of topics next week, talking about a little more on this exact subject of why we be this way, because
why we do this?
why do we do this?
Exact broken grammar.
So please, if you want to follow us, subscribe on your podcast app, follow us on Instagram, Mastodon. There's links in the show notes. We have an RSS feed if that's your jam. So subscribe and stay tuned for more episodes. I hope you're enjoying them. We've been Indulgently Minimal. Any thoughts, questions, comments, send us an email. indulgentlyminimal@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. Any thoughts, questions, or ideas for new shows, let us know. Once again, thank you to all of our supporters over on Ko-fi. We really appreciate each and every one of you. It does help us keep making the show and paying our bills. There's a link in the show notes. It's ko-fi.com/indulgentlyminimal. I've been Moggy, and I've been joined today by Jeff.
Thanks, guys. Remember to go easy on yourselves.
And Murdoch.
And remember, folks, indulge a little.
Thanks for joining us. See you for the next one. Bye.
See you later, guys.
Take care, everyone.
Also, think how much better my English muffins would be with an offset spatula.
No.
No British baking.